This is The Mountain Life. I'm Lynn Ware Peak.
And I'm Mary Beth Maziarz. In a time that often feels rushed, unsettled, and globally tumultuous, longtime Park City local Elizabeth Lentz is inviting the community to slow down together. Through her Silent Walks for Peace at McPolin Farms, scheduled Saturdays, March 21st and 28th, beginning at 11 a.m. near the silos, participants gather not to talk, but to walk in quiet reflection, exploring what it means to find peace within and to carry it into daily life.
Elizabeth was inspired by the teachings of Thich Nhat Hanh and a growing global movement toward mindful action. And she shares with us how something as simple as walking in silence can open the door to awareness, connection, and a deeper sense of compassion for ourselves and the world around us. Elizabeth Lentz, welcome to The Mountain Life. Well, we're so pleased to talk about something that someone is doing here locally that is positive and it's quiet and it's calm. It's in response to what, Elizabeth?
It in response to the collective energy in the world, in our town, and the energy is violent, angry, fearful, and people are afraid to communicate openly and suffer. And it's actually really a response to the suffering of people and their helplessness.
Tell us a little bit about Thich Nhat Hanh. I have seen his name around for years, and I'm not really familiar with his teachings.
Well, Thich Nhat Hanh used to be very active during the Vietnam War and decided it's not enough to just sit in the monastery and meditate and turn away. It's like we meditate to find what we can do with our very, very own gifts uniquely to help the suffering around and the violence. And so he is one of who taught his monks to step out. He was invited to Paris for the peace conference. And in Vietnam, they noticed he was too powerful with his peaceful way that they didn't let him back in the country. So that's why he built a monastery in France.
Isn't that an interesting thing that someone could be too powerful through their peaceful way? That a government feels threatened by that. Can you tell us what happens? I mean, it seems a little self-explanatory, but tell us about the process of going on a silent walk. How does it work?
Well, I do silent walks. It's part of the meditation, walking and sitting. And so the walking has seemed very helpful to me, you know, when I just have to find myself. And it is not just the walking. I run up a mountain. I get rid of the energy. It's a real internal way. I gather the people and teach them very briefly that very slow movement, which has to have the focus on the breath, an alignment in the feet, and then with the breath and the feet to really notice we have our very own rhythm to walk. So stepping, lifting one foot up, inhale, then pause, exhale, landing, inhale, pause, exhale, landing. So people get into the body, that the meditation, fully embodied meditation, and noticing how they can soften into the landing, and the inhale gives them the energy to open. So we're always opening and then landing again, because in everyday life, we want to we only meditate, we do yoga, we do all those things to actually do it in our real life, you know, regularly, automatically. So I teach them to walk, not a fast pace, but just a one when you walk on the street, nobody would know that you're meditating. So I tell people to try out sort of a normal, slow, but not slow walk, and then count their breath. So we experiment with that. Everybody finds their own rhythm. And then we just start walking on the trail there. I mean, McPolin is just an amazing starting point. you know, some people walk a little slower, some a little faster. I always say, if this is not for you, if you turn around, it has nothing to do with me. I have no agenda.
Let me ask you this. So many people use music or podcasts or different things to distract themselves or just to enrich their time when they're walking or working out. How is the experience different? Do some people find it challenging to do this without external stimulation aside from nature?
Yeah, the ones who really find it challenging don't show up. Because we do, you know, it's very much known that we do distract ourselves from silence because we might hear something which is uncomfortable. So people do feel that, and especially in Park City, you know, with people being so active and so competitive, that walking is like getting away from everything. And so last time, there was one lady, I actually met her in the supermarket, and she said, you know, it's really difficult, this slow walking. I usually, when I walk, I walk. And so we talked a little bit about it, and I explained, and she said, yeah, it's probably more like walking a labyrinth. And I'm like, yeah, that's a really good thing. And she said, I'm gonna come back, but I have to admit, when we turned around, I kept walking really fast to St. Mary's. And I thought this was so, like, that experience alone is worth the walk. Because it's just getting aware what our habitual ways are to sort of survive. And usually they are handed down from generations. The habitual way going for war to fight for peace has been going on for eons. So how can we create a culture where there is peace? We need awareness. I mean, I don't have the answer. Nobody has the answer, but we all have answers in us which are creative and think of the whole fabric of humanity.
Elizabeth, part of your inspiration, I think, for organizing these walks is how you bring up you were born in Germany, raised in around the Bavaria area, I believe, in post-World War II Germany, where after that unimaginable, unthinkable thing happened, in schools you were taught that this can never happen again. Can you go into that history for us?
Yes. The population was in such a shock and disbelief and shame, whatever it was. The actual generation who fought in the war did not talk. It's sort of similar as it is here when the veterans come back, you know, and now what we know with PTSD and everything, it's very clear the pain was too much. So the school, after the war, they decided, the new leadership decided, what was the reason that Hitler was actually able to do that? And they said it was uneducated population, and it was poverty and inequality. And so it was the poor uneducated that tried to focus. So they created a system with free education, which still is the case. Universities, all the way up to university, is free. When you go to higher schools, it's the grades and not the money. That's what their focus was, and to create a social system that nobody ever has enough food, has housing, and has health care. And that was the social democratic system they decided. So I was one of the first generation. I'm out of a farmer's family, who actually went to school. And there, the teachers, I mean, we listened to the speeches of Hitler. We had to analyze them. We had to notice where the dogma was. Everything was like, this cannot happen again. And this is why it happened, because we had poverty. We need to care for each other. Whether it's the cleaning lady or the trash truck driver, they all have vacation. They don't make as much money as the doctor, but they have decent income. They rent, but their rent is affordable. So that's what they said. So I'm like, yeah, our system is not creating that safety. So That's how I grew up. And we had to study it, learn it, and listen to it. It was really interesting when I heard the very first speech of our now president. He wasn't even nominated. And I had this visceral, weird thing. I was like, what was that? And then only later, I realized that the rhetoric and that what I have heard as a kid growing up sounded just like this. And I'm like, this is amazing. And then I paid attention. And the playbook is playing out perfectly. So what do I do having this history? And then there were three women last time at the walk. They were all Germans who just do positive work. They said we needed to do something. So I think every person has something, a gift, a talent. I mean, there's so many incredible people in Park City who are in government to just add to peace versus to war and violence.
I love how this takes one's interpretation of what's happening in the world around them externally and chooses, instead of pushing back with more violence or more conflict, instead of raising the stakes of that conflict, it's actually trying to lower the intensity around that by using a peaceful personal process. Sometimes it's easy to feel hopeless or that we don't have any power in a much, much larger situation. What do you hope that they're going to be able to take with them into their daily life?
It'll be so different because they come from all walks of life and some have meditated, some haven't. But really an inner experience, sort of like an aha, I didn't know that this is living in me. And even if it's just like a sadness which puts them into depression, and afterwards they come out and they say, you know, I thought it's like something somber, but I feel so light, like this alone, because you then, that part in you which wakes up is then alive in the world, right? And we need alive people in the world, not contracted, fearful people, or, you know, the anger. I mean, the anger, of course there's anger in me, but I know there's anger in me, so I'm gonna connect with my anger and say, oh, hello, you're there. Let's use that fiery energy to do something. And then I'm quiet again. I don't know what it is. And then this silent walk idea came up and I'm like, well, I can think about it all night, all day, and then later regret that I didn't do it. So why not try it?
Well, our guest has been Park City local Elizabeth Lentz, and she's inviting the community to her silent walk for peace at McPollen Farm. It's this coming Saturday, March 21st, also March 28th. It begins at 11 a.m. near the silos at the McPollen Barn along Highway 224. Elizabeth, thank you so much for joining us on The Mountain Life.
Thank you. And I hope people are brave enough to experiment with this.